Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. This is the Rick Thompson Report with Rick Thompson. Hello, Dad. How are you today?
Hello, Luke. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
You're looking quite bronzed. Has it been sunny in Paris?
I'm looking bronzed. It has been fairly sunny. I think I've still got a bit of tan from the holiday. But also the lighting in this room is good. If I turn this light off, it might make me look like a zombie. So, you see, turned these lights off, I don't look quite as good.
No, you don't. But, I mean, compared with you, I look rather pale. But never mind. I think it's just that my camera isn't as good as yours. I like your shirt, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
And you're going to like this as well. Look, if I just...
Oh, bye. That's a bit early for this podcast, actually. That's very, very good.
So it says bye.
Like
on the back of the T-shirt there. Yes. So here we are, a video version as well, Dad.
Oh, well, I know. In colour.
In full colour, Technicolour. How does it feel to be? So this video is going to go up on YouTube. I think this is your first. Is this your first YouTube?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, apart from one or two, you know, conferences that have been on YouTube. But the first time with Luke's English Podcast in Vision.
Mm. And I've got
an appropriate
mug
here. The Rick Thompson Report. Can you believe it?
So, audio listeners, I'm wearing a Luke's English Podcast T-shirt that says bye on the back, and I'm drinking tea from a Rick Thompson Report mug, which looks splendid. You can get them from the merch store.
I'll have to buy one. I'll have to get one. Okay.
Yeah, so I was going to say, this is going to go on YouTube. I think this is the first time you've been on YouTube. So I don't know how familiar you are with being on video and stuff. You used to work in a TV newsroom making TV news, but did you ever actually appear on TV reading the news?
Oh, yes. When I was a lot younger, yes. I started off in the Midland region in Birmingham and you know, I did reporting and did some... Studio presenting. I was the sports reporter for about a year.
Really? And you were like Alan Partridge?
Yes, like Alan Partridge. And so I did those kind of, it was a terrific game of two halves, you know, and all that kind of thing in the studio. Yeah, and did a bit of presenting of other programs as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I had hair.
Well, I'm sure I'm sure my listeners or viewers in this case are happy to actually be able to see the Rick Thompson Report as well as listen to it. So, and video viewers. So this is the Rick Thompson Report where I talk to my dad about politics, news and current affairs, which almost always means an update on the ongoing Brexit saga. This is where we often talk about Brexit. So what's going on in the UK at the moment? How is Brexit going? Remember that before the referendum, do you remember this, viewers, listeners? Before the referendum, I talked about it on the podcast. Before the EU referendum, there were various predictions made by experts who recommended that Brexit was a bad idea. I don't know if you remember any of those predictions. They were labelled by the pro-Brexit side as Project Fear, meaning that critics of Brexit were just trying to make everyone scared about leaving the EU, but it was all baseless and everything was going to be wonderful when we left in a very non-specific way, but wonderful. Well, we're now getting to a stage where we can see if those predictions are coming true or not. So, Dad, let's get started. How long has the UK actually been out of the EU now, and how's it going?
Well, it's exactly 9 months since we actually left the single market and the customs union and the other big mechanisms of sharing in between the EU countries, like the common agricultural policy, the common fisheries policy, and so on, after many delays. Yes, you mentioned it was a saga. It is a saga. I hope your viewers and listeners, you know, won't get too bored of this saga, because, I mean, it's a long time since that referendum you mentioned, and it happened on the 23rd of June 2016. And, you know, the Prime Minister at the time was David Cameron. He didn't think that people would vote to leave the EU, really. And he got a nasty shock and promptly resigned and walked away from the problem he'd created. Now, your regular listeners and viewers will know that I'm not in favour of Brexit at all. And now that I don't work for the BBC, I can express my own opinions freely and frankly. So they are my own opinions. And I am no fan of Boris Johnson. I think he's a disgrace. So that's, you're going to get my views. I think they'll be based on fact. I mean, they will be based on facts. So since the referendum, and then we had Theresa May trying to get a deal through the House of Commons, unable to do it. And finally, she resigned in 2019. And the ruling Conservative Party decided that they would have Boris Johnson as their prime minister. So he wasn't actually elected. He was picked by the ruling party. That's the way it works.
And just to kind of clarify some context. So after, yes, the country narrowly voted to leave the EU, then there was the deal would be then we've got to work out how to leave and how to create some sort of trading agreement with our nearest neighbour and one of our biggest trading partners. How do we pull apart this one agreement? We have to create a new one of some sort. And that's called the deal. What kind of deal? The ridiculous thing is that everyone's struggling, desperately struggling to find some sort of deal that would be even half as good as being in the EU itself. But anyway, never mind that. So the deal is about renegotiating a new agreement on terms of trade and all sorts of other things with the EU. So that's what the deal is all about. Yes. Theresa May failed to get a deal, and Boris Johnson then came along.
And obviously, what we had was lots and lots of extravagant promises from this, what I would regard as a pretty hard right nationalistic element in the Conservative Party. And the Conservative Party has different, you know, nuances, different colours of blue, in the same way the Labour Party has some people who are fairly extreme left and others who are regarded as moderate. The Conservative Party is the same. But they played this nationalist populist card about waving the national flag and talking about Brussels, you know, taking in charge of our laws and Freedom Day. They talked about Freedom Day and all this kind of stuff. And those of us who knew a little bit about it would be absolutely infuriated that this alliance of democratic states that have given us peace for my lifetime, for the first time in the history of Europe, and a terrific internal market with no barriers at all, no tariffs, no nothing, was going to be trashed for some kind of strange idea that we are going to be free. So you ask, well, how's it going? It's going badly. I mean, it's very timely, this podcast, because I don't know whether people have seen pictures on their TV news, but at the moment, the country is in a bit of a chaotic mess. The headline thing is that we have a shortage of petrol at the petrol stations and long queues, a lot of them closed. There have even been fights breaking out at petrol stations. As people think others have been jumping the queue, and because they get so frustrated, the government is all at sea. There's a good phrase for you. They're like marooned on a boat at the sea. They don't know what they're doing. So people have been saying, well, no wonder we're short of lorry drivers, because we're not actually all that short of fuel. We're short of drivers.
Yeah, so why can't people get their fuel then? It's because of the lack of drivers.
There's a serious shortage of people licensed to drive heavy goods vehicles, HGV drivers, so lorry drivers, truck drivers. Now, there's a bit of a shortage in other European countries as well. Germany's got a shortage of HGV drivers. Poland has as well. But they can bring them in easily from neighboring countries. And so there is no panic in Germany. Here we have some empty shelves in supermarkets because they can't get their food delivered. We have other implications of the fact that there aren't enough lorry drivers. For example, I know somebody who's a surgeon who went to try to get to hospital to do an operation. And when they finally got there after queuing for petrol, found that the so-called scrubs, the special kit they have to wear to do the operation, hadn't arrived. So there's all sorts of things going on. And it is a real crisis, actually. The fuel is one where apparently about 15% of our petrol stations are operating at the moment. I mean, 85% of them are closed.
It's Whoa, fantastic. Really?
And the roads are fairly empty because a lot of people just are not going to work because they can't. This is the third, fourth day of this crisis, and it's slowly getting better. Okay, and it doesn't affect the whole of the country. Some parts of the country have got their petrol stations open. Scotland is doing all right. But it is a mess at the moment.
You actually had to cancel a holiday, you and Mum.
We were going to go up north into Northumberland and do some driving around. And we decided it wasn't worth the risk. We weren't going to spend our holiday hunting for petrol. So while we still had enough in the tank, we came home. We abandoned our holiday.
So why aren't there enough HGV drivers then?
That is a very good question. A number of reasons. One is the COVID situation, which apparently meant a lot of the tests were cancelled because they couldn't sit in the cab and do a test. So there was a backlog of people getting qualified. Another reason is systemic, in that a lot of lorry drivers are older and, you know, are retiring, and they're not being replaced by young people who don't want to be truck drivers. But that's part of the reason. Another reason is Brexit. And it's actually quite a major reason. A survey of the Lorry Drivers Association, the Road Haulage Association, that put that near the top of the reasons why they haven't got enough drivers. They estimate that they are 100,000 drivers short of what they need to keep all the supply chains going smoothly. That's a lot of drivers. And guess what? The number of EU drivers, drivers from Poland, Romania and everybody else, everywhere else, who went home after Brexit because it wasn't one of the categories of employment that would allow them to come and work, so they all went home. And it's a major reason for a shortage of drivers, which means the supply chains are very vulnerable at the moment. So it's a mess at the moment.
It's interesting, the COVID point, because some people will say, oh, it's because of COVID, you're just blaming it on Brexit, but it's because of COVID. But there is a sort of, there is a way of testing.
So some people do say that in the right-wing newspapers, and the right-wingers in the Conservative Party will say, oh, it's all about COVID, it's nothing to do with Brexit, but they're wrong. There's lots of evidence to show that the Brexit paperwork that came in put off a lot of companies from bringing their goods to Britain in trucks. They couldn't face it, and it was also expensive. And as I say, a lot of the drivers just went home. So it is a major factor, whatever they say. As I said, I'm very, very hostile to the notion of leaving the EU, but we have done. But one of the problems was that Boris Johnson and his colleagues didn't negotiate a decent Brexit. They had what's called a hard Brexit right at the very last minute. So we crashed out of the EU, really, with a lot of things left unresolved. One of them is this freedom of movement for certain categories of people. They didn't go for the low-skilled people. They don't want low-skilled people. So we have a shortage of ancillary workers in the health service, care workers who work in care homes, lorry drivers, people who to pick seasonal fruit. The food processing industry has a major shortage of workers, and all these things were very much supplied by places, particularly from Eastern Europe. We had a lot of people from Hungary and Romania, Poland, who came and found the wages were good compared with what they had at home. And they were very efficient and effective. Nobody was complaining about them. The Conservatives say, oh, they were undercutting British workers. Absolute nonsense. The British workers didn't want to pick fruit and didn't want to work in care homes, and they regarded it as, you know, something that wasn't paid well enough. So they were filling a much-needed gap, and that gap is now apparent. We have a shortage of nurses, we have a shortage of care home workers, and so on. So at the moment, after 9 months, Brexit is looking like a really, really bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the COVID thing again, just briefly, one thing about when people say it's the effects of COVID, well, you know, you just look at, you know, Europe, look at the nations of Europe and see how they're coping with COVID. Are they suffering the same kinds of consequences as us at the moment, if it's just COVID?
Not as serious as us. As far as the other crisis that's going on at the moment, which is the price of energy. So that's affecting everybody. It's a worldwide hike in the wholesale price of gas in particular. And it's
Do
gone
we know
up
why
it's enormously. Gone? It's gone up 200% in just a few months.
I Do mean, we know
fantastically.
Why?
Well, there's a whole number of reasons. one of them is the recovery from COVID means all the industries have started back up again. Activity has started back up again, and suddenly there's a big demand for energy. And the way the market works is when there's high demand, the price goes up and there isn't so much supply. It's called supply and demand. The other one is that there are another number of other factors. There was a fire in an electrical cable across the English Channel, which was used to, you know, take power from France. So that's been knocked out.
Wow.
We've had a very, very calm, strangely calm weather for the last 6 weeks. It's been still, we've had a high pressure area sitting over the British Isles, hardly any wind. So all our wind farms haven't been generating electricity.
Oh, gosh.
One of the problems with renewable energy, and we're doing quite well in expanding offshore wind farms, is that you can't store it very well. You'd need loads and loads and loads of massive batteries to store this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that has not been part of the investment. Another reason is that the Russians are playing an interesting game through their state-owned Gazprom. And Gazprom has been reducing its supplies to Europe. But the problem for Britain is that other European countries have a bigger reserve of gas. And we quite a big difference. I mean, we have something like 20% reserves. Germany has something like 60% reserves, if you can understand that. And that's, again, a failure of government that people have said, people in the industry have said, we're vulnerable to price hikes or shortages because we haven't invested in enough reserves. So it always comes back to the government in the end that they haven't planned. They didn't plan for a pandemic, even though they had a rehearsal in 2018 by their emergencies group. They rehearsed for a pandemic. And at the end of it, an extensive report went to the government saying, if we have a pandemic, we are not ready. The stores of special clothing, the
PPE.
PPE, various other things have to be put in readiness because we haven't got it. Because everyone knows there's going to be a pandemic sometime.
Yeah, I mean, people had been talking about it for many years.
They come along every now and then. And we were pretty much due for one, which was why, you know, they had this exercise. And the government did nothing, absolutely nothing.
Is this Johnson's government?
It was 2018, so it was actually just before Johnson, but he must have known that this was a recommendation. They're very reluctant to spend money on anything. This is another trait of right-wing philosophy, that they believe in small government. and believe that business will sort everything out. Let the market decide. Mm-hmm. Small government is good government. Well, the pandemic has jolted them out of that because they had to act and do things. And they've spent huge amounts of taxpayers' money, on vaccines and other measures. It's still happening. I mean, we're still spending a lot of money on things which are the result of Brexit as well as the result of the pandemic.
So what's going on here with this government? Is it just incompetence or is there something more sinister going on?
It's a very good question.
You mentioned, the Conservative government's policy is often to push the private sector and sort of bring the private sector into everything and let let business take care of itself and so on. And but the government is facing genuine criticism of proper corruption, isn't it? I mean, it's that people have been making these observations and comments about things like, so the government introduces its testing system, the test and trace system, which is a way to try to make sure that everyone coming into the country is tested properly and monitored.
It's not just people coming into the country. It happens across the country so that they could see where the big outbreaks of COVID happening. And then, you test people to find out how many have got it. And in different parts of the country, it varied quite a lot. And then you have to trace people who test positive and isolate them. And that was what test and trace was mainly about it within the country. And of course, it didn't work. And it cost huge amounts of money, thousands of millions of pounds. And it just didn't work. And mainly because it was put out to lots and lots of private companies, many of which weren't capable of doing it. And a lot of these companies were friends of the Conservative Party.
That's the criticism, right? That in rolling out the whole testing system, a lot of contracts for all sorts of stuff, testing packs and PP, personal protective equipment, that's your masks and all the rest of it, all the other things that need to be provided for this. And all of those contracts were, given to...
A lot of them were given to companies that had suddenly popped up out of nowhere and were friends of the Conservative Party. So they were bizarre companies that, made pens or something. And suddenly they said, well, we can do PPE. And they got huge contracts to provide stuff. Some of it was okay. A lot of it wasn't. A lot of the stuff that was provided wasn't good enough. It was a complete waste of money.
So two things, the quality of the stuff and the fact that all the contracts for all this stuff was just given to, friends of the Tories, basically.
A lot of them were. And it is a scandal, and everyone's been calling for some kind of inquiry. And Boris Johnson and co say, "Oh yes, yes, we'll in let's get over this problem first, and then we'll have our inquiry." It'll be very interesting if it finally gets round to it, what the results will be, because on the face of it, there is a good case for saying that there has been some corruption going on, and a lot of people have benefited from this coronavirus outbreak. I'm sorry to sound so negative to all your listeners. I mean, obviously, the sun is shining. Everything could always be worse, but it is infuriating that we are in the throes of a government that you say, why are they just incompetent or what? Yes, they're incompetent. They don't have any public service ethos. There are some politicians who are statesmanlike. They have some vision and they do the right thing. And there are other politicians who have no vision and they want to do as little as possible. And this has been an incoherent government from the beginning of this outbreak all the way through, completely incoherent. Nobody knows what the hell is going on.
It's a gang, isn't it, as well? It's a faction.
Their main qualification is that they're Brexiters. So we are looking at the right wing of a right-wing party. And they don't believe in intervention. They don't believe in intervention. They believe in laissez-faire. It'll all work out.
a lot of those MPs, those ministers are in the cabinet, not necessarily because of their skills and their abilities, but because of their loyalty to the Brexit project, right? And this is always a feature of this sort of government, these extreme governments. They end up making their decisions based on ideological loyalty rather than actually making things work. There's also a sort of a lack of accountability going on, isn't there? And transparency.
Yes, it is a little difficult. The ruling Conservative Party do have a lot of the newspapers on their side, so they have quite a lot of support in the big newspapers. The media have found it very difficult to cope with reporting Brexit because a majority of the people voted for it. So even though the evidence is that it's bad, they have to, you know, obviously play it quite straight, if you know what I mean. I think that people are starting to realise now that it is.
What you're getting at there, though, I think, though, is the fact that on the BBC they never say it's Brexit. So all the fuel crisis and blah blah blah, they're not saying, and this is because of Brexit. They don't explicitly say it clearly enough. Because they feel sensitive about openly being critical of Brexit because that becomes too partisan, and the BBC's role is to be non-partisan and to be objective, and they don't want to, you know, take sides and, you know, and so on, right?
To be fair, the fuel, current fuel crisis isn't just about Brexit.
No.
And
okay.
But there are plenty of times when it is reported by all the media, all the TV and radio stations together, it's not just the BBC, are pointing out that Brexit has not delivered what was promised. I mean, in all sorts of sectors, you know, the British fishing industry is quite important. We're an island, and you know, they were very strongly for Brexit because they wanted to take control of our waters and keep EU boats out of our waters and everything else, especially since fish stocks are declining. So it becomes a little bit more of a vicious battle. Well, they have discovered that it has done absolutely nothing for the fishing industry, nothing at all. And the number of boats is still declining. There are all sorts of impacts that are starting to be apparent. People with holiday homes abroad, and there's a lot of them, aren't allowed to stay there for more than 3 months at a time, or 3 months in any 6 months, because they're no longer in the EU. So that's a problem for some people. The Erasmus scheme was this very active student exchange system where students could spend a year in another university within the EU. Well, our students and I excluded from the Erasmus scheme. What benefit is that? The music and entertainment business is in trouble because if you wanted to take your band on a tour of Europe, you can't unless you manage to get separate permissions to go in each European country with loads and loads of paperwork.
For each individual member of the group and the staff and everything.
So the Rolling Stones are currently in America. They can't tour Europe, so they're touring the United States.
Still going, by the way, the Stones, just in additionally. They're still going, I mean.
They're still going. Mick Jagger's 80. They're still going.
I thought that with the death of Charlie Watts that they would stop, but no, they're carrying on, which is cool.
They're still going. Yeah. Anyway, just ranting on here about all the disadvantages. But the fact is, if you look at this objectively and fairly and dispassionately, say, well, what are the advantages of us leaving the EU? I can't think of one.
I'm not finding one either. And we're looking for specific, tangible things, not just vague notions like, well, we're taking back control. No vague notions. We're only allowed specific, measurable gains from this. And people say, that the Brexit supporters say, well, you know, I'm willing to take an economic hit for the advantages. But even down the line, even in 50 years, tell me what the advantages will be.
Yeah,
and people say, well, we can make our own laws and stuff, but we could already do that.
Maybe some of your viewers and listeners will be shouting at the screen now and saying, yeah, oh, come maybe. On, you know, you're being completely biased and you know, maybe
negative.
People who being negative. Well, I don't want to be negative, but it's just I can't see any advantages at all. And we've only been properly out for 9 months. There's a long way to go yet. Shall we switch to talk about Northern Ireland, Luke?
yeah, we can. I was just going to mention, before we do that, just one possible thing we could talk about during this conversation. I don't want it to go on too long. Do you remember Yellowhammer? Do you remember what
Operation
that was?
Operation Yellowhammer.
Yeah. So it was a code word.
What was it for?
It was a code name used by the British Treasury. That's basically the Ministry for the Economy.
Finance,
right?
Yeah.
Finance. It was a code name used by the British Treasury for cross-governmental civil contingency planning. So this is planning across every department in the government for the possibility of Brexit without a withdrawal agreement. So this is the government saying, OK, so if there is a hard Brexit, what's going to happen? Let's have a look at, let's do some contingency planning to see what the effects might be across all ministries and all departments. And so they did, you know, proper contingency planning, and then they came out with these predictions. which were then ignored, right?
Yes, that's right. But they were ignored.
But the predictions, do you want me to just mention some of them?
Yes, go on.
So the predictions for Operation Yellowhammer included these things. So peace. These are the things that could be affected by a hard Brexit. Peace. We're going to mention this. Hard Irish border. And a hard border on the island of Ireland causing social unrest, potential conflict, you know, bringing back the unrest of the past, and also smuggling as well. Disorder, social disorder, community tension and public disorder. I think this relates to the fact that, immediately after the Brexit result came in, there was a marked increase in sort of racial-related hate crimes and, you know, examples of that, basically. Ports. Flow rate down 40-60%, 2-day delays at the border, energy issues, fewer providers, less choice and higher prices, fishing rights would be in dispute, shortages of staff and medicines in healthcare, staff shortages and higher costs in social care, travel delays, food, you know, trouble getting food, and pets as well, shortage of vets and medicines as well. So all those different things were predicted. How many of those things have kind of are actually happening, do we think?
Well, there's time yet, but a lot of them are happening. If you take Northern Ireland, this is in a very tense state now. We're coming up to another little deadline for some kind of deal over Northern Ireland. It's difficult to explain this thing very clearly, but when we were in the EU along with the Republic of Ireland, there was no problem. There's free movement of people, goods and services. The moment Northern Ireland is out of the EU, the question then was, well, are we going to have some kind of border between Northern Ireland and the Republic so that we can limit goods?
So we've got a border which is basically EU and not EU.
Yes, that's right.
And it
right.
also means the EU, Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland.
The EU as a whole obviously jealously guards its external border because it has complete free movement of goods, people and capital within, but not outside. So what do you do about the fact that Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland won't be together anymore? And everybody agreed that the last thing they wanted was a border in Ireland because it would bring back the IRA for a start, undoubtedly. But it was impractical as well. There was so much traffic you know, between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland in one way or another, that it was going to be entirely unacceptable on every front. So what do we do now about the border? Well, this has gone on and on and on, but there was an agreement that there would be checks between Northern Ireland and the mainland. Now, this has infuriated the majority unionists in Northern Ireland, because the whole point is that they feel that they're an integral part of the United Kingdom. And the idea of having a border and border checks between them and England or Scotland is infuriating them. And the last few days, the various unionist parties in Northern Ireland, mainly Protestant unionists, have got together. There are four of them. And instead of, being hostile, trying to win the unionist votes against each other, they've joined up to basically give an ultimatum to the British government that basically if we continue having these checks between the mainland and Northern Ireland, I can't remember what they're threatening to do, but they will unilaterally end them.
Sorry to come in here, but basically this is a question of like, where do you draw the line? You need to put a line somewhere. Is the line between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, in which case the Republicans will get upset?
Yeah, but right? they would, but the IRA would be back, I think, Luke.
That's a reasonable
prediction. Yes, the border is down in the sea between Northern Ireland and England at the moment.
Yeah, so you got like either the line goes between Northern Ireland and Ireland slash European Union, which upsets the IRA and the Republicans in general, or you put the line between the Northern Ireland and the rest of Britain. Which obviously makes the unionists very unhappy, because this is the whole thing about Northern Ireland. Some people think it should be all reunited with Ireland. That's the Republican model. And then some people think that it should be all, you know, it should stay part of the Union. And they're very, very, very strong, passionate about this. Very small number on each side, but they're incredibly passionate about it.
It's very tense at the moment. It's very tense. So that's another thing that's going on. The labour shortages is an issue affecting a lot of different sectors. These are the people from Europe have gone home, and we have serious labour shortages all over the place. This is not getting any better. So I'm being miserable here and being, you know, anti-Brexit, as you know I always have been. But it gives me no pleasure at all to see things are starting to develop that were in many ways inevitable, that we have got a lot of difficulties now which don't seem to be easily resolved.
Then these difficulties were predicted, and yet we still don't really know the motivations for people leaving, except for certain kind of vague ideas, really.
Just to be even more miserable, I mean... Britain is also somewhat isolated in foreign policy now. When you were part of the EU, you had a certain amount of authority and clout, and we could work with France and Germany and others on international issues. And now we're adrift in the sea. And this government, this Boris Johnson government, seems to think that as long as they cozy up to the United States, everything will be fine. Well, it's not looking fine at the moment. If you take Afghanistan, for example, we had to get out fast on the coattails of the Americans, because the American president decided that it was one of his electoral promises that they would get out of Afghanistan. And there was no collaboration, no cooperation. And in the end, it was these appalling scenes of people clinging to aircraft trying to get out as we turned tail. And it turns out that there was very little liaison between the United States and Britain and a few of the other countries who were there. It became a shameful, you know, runaway. And if you look at just about any policy area, our government is on the run. It is not leading the way. It is desperately trying to catch up. There are other issues, but as you can see, and your podcasters will know that I don't say this lightly. I don't want to run down my country. I don't want to feel miserable about it. I mean, I don't. I wish I could.
Absolutely, yeah, me too.
I mean, positive, but I can't say anything positive because things are not looking good.
I'm Luke from Luke's English Podcast. It's kind of like my job to be proud of my country in a sense, you know. So it's not just choosing.
We talk about our Prime Minister.
The
one who wasn't elected by the people. He was just put in place by the Conservative Party. I mean, he is becoming such an embarrassment. It's terrible.
Yeah.
He goes to the United Nations, okay, and makes his speech to the United Nations. And, what was he saying? He was talking about Kermit the Frog. You sometimes think he's lost his mind.
A lot of nonsense comes out.
I mean, he really ought to grow up. And he does this kind of private school jollity, you know, like he's still 17 and at Eton. He talks about, prenez un grip. That's mixture of French and English. Prenez means take or
get a grip.
Get a grip. Okay. Prenez un grip. And donnez-moi un break. Give me a break.
This kind of childish
not only
stuff.
A stupid thing to say in a serious diplomatic setting, but to sort of mix up French and English because he thinks it's funny in some way.
He's childish. It's bizarre.
Absolutely
some of the stuff
childish.
That, it's bizarre some of the stuff he comes out with. I mean, do you remember that interview where someone was trying to get to know him? It's like, so, you know, Boris Johnson, you're going to be our new Prime Minister. How do you like to? What do you like to do? How do you spend your time? Like, are you a normal person? What do you do? And he didn't know what to say. And he, you know, he just did that thing where he just rubbed his hair, and then he said, "I like to make buses."
yes, I remember that one. Yes,
wooden,
I mean, he was rambling.
He's going wooden boxes. I like to make, you know, paint the buses and the interviewer's like, "You make buses?" And I said, he's like, yes. and he was like, "Yes."
What do you do to relax? What do you do to switch off?
I like to paint. I make things. I like to.
What do you make?
I have a thing where I make models of. When I was in London, Mayor of London, we build a beautiful. I make buses.
You make models of buses.
I make models of buses.
So they're going to be in Downing Street.
So what I do? No, what I don't make models of buses. But what I make is, I get old, I don't know, wooden crates.
Yeah.
Right. And then I paint them, and they have two. Suppose it's a wine. It's a box that's been used to contain two wine bottles. Right.
Right.
And it will have a dividing thing.
Yeah,
and I turn it into a bus, and I put passengers. You really want to know this?
You're making cardboard buses.
Paint,
okay,
no,
that's
paint,
what you do to enjoy yourself.
I paint the passengers enjoying themselves.
Okay, great.
On the wonderful bus.
Great.
And the whole time, every time he says all this nonsense, he's got this little smirk on his face.
Yes, I know.
This little smile, which basically is a hallmark of someone who is doing something wrong, and they know they're doing something wrong, and they don't care.
It is terrible that he and the Conservative Party still seem to be popular, according to the opinion poll. Now, there are several reasons for that. One is that he's the only recognisable politician for a lot of people because they're not interested in politics, and they think he's funny, and he's certainly different, but also. I think that the opposition, that's the Labour Party, remains in some difficulties.
Yeah, because they can't criticise Brexit either, it seems.
Well, they can't say they're going to reverse it because a majority of their supporters voted for it. They're going to have to make the best of it. But they are not particularly united. They're having their annual party conference at the moment and it's not going well. I think next week it's the Conservative Party conference. And we know what to expect. It'll be a lot of complete bullshit about how brilliant everything is. And then the third party in England, the Liberal Democrats, still haven't really got their act together, but they might get some more support in certain parts of the country. And in Scotland, of course, it's a different story altogether. The political scene there is dominated by the SNP, the Scottish National Party, and their main policy is to go independent. And it is entirely conceivable that if the shambles continues from London, they'll gain more and more support, and they might have another referendum, and they might actually vote to leave, and then what would happen? So Boris Johnson and his nationalist cabinet are playing with fire here, that they don't know what to do about Northern Ireland. Scotland could actually drift away. What would they do then? Break up with the United Kingdom. And of course, we have it's the economy, stupid. I hope your listeners understand that statement. An American president was asked, what's the big issue? He said, is the economy stupid? And the economy stupid is always what it is. It's always the economy in the end. And of course, the economy isn't looking too clever. Our inflation rate is going up quite quickly for a number of reasons. And if they lose their grip on the economy, that will be the kind of last straw. It's a very interesting time, and it'll be interesting to see how we come out of the Christmas period and see whether they're still as popular as they are now, because Labour and Conservatives are about equal in popularity stakes.
Okay. So interesting to see what could happen. Mm. Well, all miserable stuff.
Sorry, listeners. But I am miserable about it. I have to.
And everyone's happy to listen to you talk about it. So we've done the weather at the start, which is the normal way of doing it. We've touched on Brexit and stuff. There's lots of stuff, other stuff we could talk about, but there isn't enough time. But at the end, we always have to do a sports report as well, Dad. So what are some of the sporting highlights of the last couple of weeks or months? There's football, cricket, boxing, maybe some other stuff.
Yes. The football is the big one. I mean, the football season is now nicely underway, and the Premiership is still brilliant. I mean, there are goals and incidents in every match. I mean, it's just go, and a lot of great players. My team, Liverpool, are at the top of the league, yes, and playing very well. They played a European tie last night away. And 1-5-1.
Wow, really?
They're a terrific side, but there are a lot of good sides, and so the Premier League is great value, great fun. As for the
Man City lost against PSG last night. That's Paris Saint-Germain, the Parisian, the big football team from Paris. And I was downstairs just on the sofa last night, and suddenly there was a huge noise from outside, and it turned out that Messi had scored a goal against Man City. So Messi is the new signing at Paris.
I saw his goal on the telly last night. It's a really good one.
Can you describe it?
He cuts in from the right towards the penalty area, dances past a couple of players, and smashes it in the top corner with his left foot. Whack! I mean, it's absolutely terrific goal. Anyway. You wait till PSG come up against Liverpool.
I can't wait for that.
And the cricket's still going on. We've got a tour coming up, and we've just had the big golf thing. People
Ryder Cup.
Know about golf, the Ryder Cup. This happens. It's Europe against USA, and in this at least, Britain is still in Europe.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we played away in the USA and we were terrible and got beaten by a record score of the Ryder Cup.
Oh, God, did we? Yeah, oh, dear. Yeah. Bad time for Europe then, sporting wise.
Anyway, so there's always sport to keep us entertained.
Anthony Joshua lost his heavyweight title. Yeah, that's another thing that happened to a Ukrainian. I don't remember the guy's name.
No,
unfortunately,
I can't remember
Usyk.
His name
Usyk, I think it is.
But he said, "I'll be back."
Well, we're all waiting for the big fight between Joshua and what's his name, Tyson Fury. I don't know if you follow boxing.
Not a lot, but I have heard of Tyson Fury.
He's a very interesting character,
isn't it? Good name.
Yeah, he was actually named after Mike Tyson, but he's a really interesting character, Tyson Fury, because he is from the sort of gypsy community. I guess that's the appropriate term.
Yeah, that's the Roma sort of community, maybe.
Yeah, that's his background. He's from English gypsy family. He's done incredibly well. But an interesting bloke, though, really interesting to watch him fight as well. Very unconventional. And yeah, that's something that people want to see. Okay, well, Dad, thank you very much for this.
I hope it's been all right for your listeners. I mean, if they take an interest in how the only country ever to leave the EU, how we're getting on, the answer is not looking too good at the moment.
Okay. All right, well, have a nice lunch now and a nice rest of the day.
Yeah, same to you. And you know, hope you have a really good day.
Thank you. All right, then, Dad, speak to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Okay, listeners, so that was the Rick Thompson Report for, I'm calling it autumn 2021. It was actually recorded right at the end of September. But there you go, the Rick Thompson Report. There is a video version of that as well, if you'd like to see the Rick Thompson Report as well as actually listen to it. And there you go. Thanks again to my dad for being part of that. It's always very nice of him to come on the podcast, isn't it, and talk to us about everything that's going on. And it's very interesting to listen to the way he does it as well. He's got a way with words, my dad, I would say. So thank you again to him. So I'm just sitting here in my pod room, with the window open. And I don't know if I mentioned it, I recorded a premium episode today or yesterday. Oh, there we go. Can you hear that? This is what I was talking about. Okay, so there are workmen just outside, sort of working on the roof, just outside my window here. So they might start crashing and banging and hammering and drilling and sawing and things like that at any moment. But I just wanted to add a few words here at the end of the episode, you know, just to kind of, you know, close the episode in the right way. But yeah, basically I've got the A-team working right outside my window. Do you know who the A-team are? The A-team were, it's like an American TV show from the 80s. And there was Mr. T playing B.A. Baracus and Hannibal, played by George Peppard. Face and Mad Dog Murdoch, the kind of crazy one, and they drove around in a black van with a red stripe that went up the side of the van, the A-team. And what would happen with the A-team is that they'd get into some sort of big fight situation where they get stuck in a garage and there are loads of bad guys outside with machine guns, and they're sort of in this garage, and suddenly you hear lots of drilling and hammering and sawing and stuff, and there's a montage of the A-team building something in the garage. And there's always a moment where someone is like, you know that thing where you've got, what is it, welding. There's someone welding, normally. And then after the montage is finished, they burst out of the garage and they've built a tank. They've built a massive tank, a flame-throwing tank, which they use to get rid of all the bad guys. But in the A-team, because it was like shown on a Saturday... Oh, there we go. The A-team are working away outside. I close the window. Because the A-team was on TV on a Saturday sort of late afternoon, early evening, sort of kids' time. And there's people like shooting machine guns at each other and stuff, but no one ever gets killed. They just sort of shoot the machine guns at each other and sort of roll out of the way, and then people get punched and stuff, but there's no actual consequence to any of the violence, including some, you know, quite dangerous military grade weaponry that's being used and stuff. So anyway, I've got the A team outside. That's all I wanted to say. I don't know. Yeah, that's it. The thing I wanted to add here is that, so yes, I did record a premium episode and the A-team were sort of a little bit involved in that as well. I mentioned them there as well. But anyway, this premium episode I did today, I just wanted to let the premium Lepsters know that it's there. So that's P31 part 5. Okay. It's recorded, it's published, the PDFs are up and everything. So that's there. And I just wanted to give you a sort of heads up about that because I published the premium one just before I published this one. Okay. So I just wanted to say, hey, don't forget about the premium one. It's just there underneath this one. And you can get your teeth stuck into that. It's full, it's rich, full of descriptive vocabulary. And there are, I think, something like 30 items of target language in there, fully dealt with, fleshed out with examples and discussion questions and all of the rest of it. So get your teeth into that. Okay, P31 part 5. And part 6 is coming soon. That's the pronunciation drills. Thank you so much for listening to Luke's English Podcast and the Rick Thompson Report. Just a little reminder, you can also get merchandise. If you want to get one of those Luke's English Podcast mugs, like a Rick Thompson Report mug, you can have a mug with Rick Thompson Report written on the side, or a t-shirt or something. Just go to teacherluke.co.uk/merch. Okay, all right then. Well, I will speak to you again soon on the podcast, but for now, it's just time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.